Hi, this is Kenny Albert. In my spare time, I always enjoy listening to Baseball and Barbecue with Jeff and Len.
From the studios on Long Island, New York, in a bunker somewhere hidden away. This is episode number 243 of the show they call Baseball and Barbecue. I am Leonard Aberman here with my incredible co-host, Jeff Cohen. Some call him the OC, stands for Old Coot. You got to hear it from him first. So, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Get off my lawn.
We got an exciting one, Jeff.
Oh, tell yes, we do.
It.
We have an author who wrote the book, The House That Ruth Built. It's a great coffee table book. Her name is Kelly Bennett, and she wrote a terrific book for everybody to read, both children, non-children. It's great, great facts in there. And then, Len, who's our barbecue guest?
Oh, we've got Nick Wilson. Who's Nick Wilson, you ask? Go ahead, Jeff. Ask me.
Who's Nick Wilson, I ask?
Big Unk. He's Big Unk. You want to know why he's Big Unk?
Why is he Big Unk?
Because Big Unk takes care of his nephews.
Ah.
And he's got a great company. His rubs, the company, you're going to hear all about it. It's one of those great stories that we just happen to connect the dots. You'll hear all about that. And first, I'm going to tell you, BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV. That's BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. Jeff.
Yes, sir.
We've got Kelly Bennett.
Yes.
It's this book, The House That Ruth Built. Another book on Babe Ruth.
Yeah, but this one's different.
Exactly. That's what I'm looking for.
This one is very different. I mean, the illustrations are terrific. The illustrations are by Susanna Covelli, and it has lots of great facts on the pages, on the side of the pages, along with a story for children. It's a children's book, but it could be for adults too, because these are just things that you never knew.
Right.
Kelly was able to bring out in this book. So it's fantastic.
Yeah. And that's why I'm saying that's why it's, yes, it's another book on Babe Ruth. And so somebody might say, oh, I know all about him. No, you don't.
That's right. You do not.
This is another, it's amazing how there can be things that we don't know about this man. And it's not just, it's about Babe Ruth. It's about baseball. It's about Yankee Stadium. It's an exciting book. Very well written, very well illustrated. Kelly Bennett, The House That Ruth Built. Jeff, let's get right to it.
Baseball and BBQ is proud to have with us a fascinating children's book author. Kelly Bennett is a native of Santa Cruz, California, and has the love of writing for her entire life. She's the graduate of the Vermont College of Fine Arts Writing for Children's and Young Adults program. Kelly has written a wonderful book called The House That Ruth Built, illustrated by Susanna Covelli. This book is full of fun facts about Babe Ruth and the Yankees. I was lucky enough to meet Kelly at the Sabre event in New York City. While Kelly is a native to California, she makes a home in West Hampton Beach, New York, Houston, Texas, and someplace called Mimiville. Welcome, Kelly. And where is Mimiville?
That is anywhere my four grand boys are. We and so we've got a lot of baseball in our family. Thanks for having me on the show today.
It's our pleasure.
Kelly, welcome. Welcome to the show. Okay. Your book is great, The House That Ruth Built. And that's the book that caught Jeff's attention. Although it's nice to have a children's book author on because Jeff and I are, we are children. So.
Children, aren't we all? I mean, kind of. Thank you. So it was so fun. I got to meet Jeff at a Sabre meeting. It, for anybody who doesn't know, it's the Society of American Baseball Research. And man, those people know their stuff.
Oh, it was, they certainly do.
Yeah, they do. I want to jump into the book because it's very interesting because it's maybe a children's book, but there are things in that book that are very educational. I mean, I did not know, like, interesting, when baseball first started, fair or foul, any ball hit was fair no matter where it went.
They say that's the reason that they started having bat boys and ball boys, because nobody wanted to chase the ball down.
Yeah. So that was fascinating. Till the late 1800s, rules were established. Even the foul lines were made the foul lines, but they were just they dug them in with like a stick. And I think you said in the book that there was somebody who used the examples from tennis or something and started to use, you know, white powder or whatever it was to make the foul lines?
The chalk lines. So the way we chalk now, it started because tennis had boundaries. And so the Knickerbockers, the New York Knickerbockers, are a group of guys in New York who actually said, let's write down the rules. And up until then, baseball was played differently all over the world, really. You know, it's like sticks and balls. Everybody has some game where you hit a ball with a stick and they all sort of made it up. And, you know, it's a lot like what's been happening now. You know, everybody was in an uproar about us changing the rules recently, but baseball is one of those games that has evolved. The foul line actually used to just go to the third base, and then they extended it beyond. And, you know, sort of with an imaginary line that went out. I'm glad that you looked at the book and all the sidebars, because what I really wanted to do with this is make baseball an intergenerational sharing experience. And that's what the book is. There is Susanna Covelli is the illustrator who did this beautiful job of illustrating with oh my gosh, you guys, do you know what today is?
No.
April 18th is the 101st anniversary of the first opening day game in Yankee Stadium.
How about that?
That, look at that. See, come on, Jeff. You knew that.
You purposely
had Kelly on today. Come on, Jeff.
And the opening day crowd in the book was reported at 74,200 people, but the police had to cut the line off because everybody was just being jammed in.
And back then, they literally filled the stadium smooshed full of anybody that they could cram in. The bleachers were, maybe you read this, but the bleachers were called bleachers because they were plank boards that you sat on that bleached in the sun, which is what we all sat there roasting to death. But if you imagine a long plank, if you could get 15 bottoms on there, then 15 bottoms fit. And if you could get 30 bottoms, they all fit. It was actually, which is not good for today, but there was a stampede in Yankee Stadium during a game when Babe Ruth was playing, and it started to rain, and the crowds in the bleachers stampeded for the exits, and a couple people died. That was what caused the Yankees to actually restrict how many tickets they sold.
One thing you did mention here, the bleachers being named the bleachers, I had no idea until I read that in your book.
Right.
That makes me very happy.
Yeah. I mean, and that is why it could be an adult book as well. There's so much information in there.
It's definitely an adult children's book because this is a perfect coffee table book. A kid can pick it up, look at the pictures because it's really kid friendly for the pictures, but the adults can look at the sidebars and really learn stuff. I mean, this is really cool.
Great. That's exactly what I wanted. My hope. So you guys, I'm going to start if you even looking at the end papers, that Carlos is Morales is the book designer, and the end papers are the blueprint of Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's really cool about the book is, all right, this is the old Yankee Stadium. It's been gone. It's been gone since 2009. Arguably, nobody alive was at that game. If they were 101 years ago, I can't say how much they'd remember. The stadium doesn't exist anymore. The only thing we have really is the records. And I apologize to all you writers out there, but sports writers lied. We sort of embellish. The blueprint for the stadium had changed. So you know how architects publish their specs for what's going to happen. They were spread all over the newspaper, but they reduced the budget before the stadium was finished. So even the blueprints that were printed and what you read in the newspaper about how many seats the stadium was going to have were wrong. Mm. I did not ever set out to do as much baseball research as I had set out to tell what everybody might not know was the reason it's called the house that Ruth built is because Babe Ruth was such a famous baseball player, mostly because of him hitting home runs in the dead ball area, which people were not about hitting home runs then. It was just get on base. Maybe because of those foul lines and because they didn't have very many balls and nobody wanted to run that hard. But back then, he clearly did not get the rules. Nobody told him. When he was in school, the brother Matthias, who was his mentor and champion and got him involved in baseball, would just hit the ball with one arm, 6'6" guy, and whack it out. And Babe Ruth said the first time he saw him, he knew that's what he wanted to do.
Mm.
And he kept doing it. And they said, you know, just for baseball, yes, everybody wanted to see. Then it was really an infield game. It was just get on the base and a lot of stealing, a lot of shenanigans, a lot of bunting, just anything you could do. He didn't care. He just whacked it out there. And so he said he would do anything to hit a ball, a home run, that opening day game. And that's really the story for me, the writer. You guys know, if you're a writer, you have to have a story to hang your story on, hang your mm-hmm. book on. And that was it. It was a big story problem. Could he or couldn't he hit the ball? And then I thought, we're baseball family. So I laid out the story before Susanna Covelli started illustrating, laid out the story and sort of imagined with each little line of my text, what might interest kids and readers about that stadium. So I started, and it's set to the house that Jack built, mm-hmm. which came natural, the house that Ruth built. Remember that rhyme? You know, it's like, this is the mouse that ate the cheese in the house that Jack built.
Right.
This is the cat that chased the mouse in the house mm-hmm. that Jack built. Yeah. This is the dog. It's a building cumulative tale. And I thought, that's what baseball games are. This is a stadium that is brand new and empty and ready. And then little by little, starting with the people who chalk the field. So in my mind, I imagined, how do people show up to work? You know, what do you do first? You get the field ready, and then the bat boys get the bats out, and the ball guys get the balls out, and then they ready the stands, and then the ticket sellers come, and then the hawkers get ready, and then the sports writers get ready, and then the fans charge in, and everybody's there waiting, and then the teams come.
Yep. You mentioned the hawkers. And for the unknown, what are the hawkers? I know you wrote it in the book, but why don't you tell everybody what the hawkers were?
The hawkers were all the people that sold food. And, you know, now we go up to the counter. You know, there's still some people who come through and say peanuts and whatever. Right. But now we go up to the counter and, you know, look at the stadiums now. We have 14,000 different kinds of food and everybody's got their stuff. Back in those days, now think about it, 1923, no radios, no televisions, no computer, no refrigeration. You know, they had things on ice. They had to have food that could hold. And no liquor in the stadium yet. They did have beer, though, which was not considered liquor. It was sort of considered water. And sandwiches. And so the hawkers would go down to the kitchens and load up their baskets. And they wore like white little jackets, like ice cream vendors, you know, their little white hats and white mm-hmm. jackets, and have baskets, and would call down the line whatever food they had, you know, pennants, cold drinks, whatever, and pass it down the line.
That's really missing today. I remember going to a stadium and not just the beer and hot dogs, but there was the peanuts, there were the souvenirs, the ice cream.
Exactly.
None of that anymore. None of that.
And so much crowd interaction. Like, think about it. So there's this one guy whose name I'm blanking on, worked at Dodger Stadium.
You're talking Roger. It was in your book. Roger.
It is.
Owens, or famous peanut man at Dodger Stadium.
And you can go online and you can actually see YouTubes of him. But this guy, he would go down the line. He could throw bags of peanuts to three different people in three different areas at one time. He was like on Johnny Carson's show, famous for throwing his peanuts. But could you imagine how much more exciting being in the stands would be when you're passing down hot dogs and spilling drinks on you and trying to catch peanuts? I mean, it was fun.
Sure, sure. Talking about Babe Ruth, you have a section here. He has a couple of nicknames. We all knew a couple of them, you know, the Babe.
Couple.
Big Man, the Sultan of SWAT. But you have 20 nicknames here. Where'd you find this stuff?
There's more than 20.
More than 20, okay.
And there are quite a few I didn't include that we won't go into.
You didn't include what his wife called him.
That's true. No, I think that I have probably, they say that there are more books written about Babe Ruth than any other baseball player, or for that matter, any sports figure ever. And I'm thinking that I probably read all of them.
I never heard of the Raja of Rap, the Blunderbuss, the Mammoth of Maul. I mean, I never heard of these, but it's great to know now.
Is it? Well, you know, reading about Babe Ruth also made me read a lot of the old sports writers. And it has been said that sports writers are the best writers of all. And the adjectives and the descriptions and the ways that they came up with to describe the games were absolutely incredible.
Ellie,
it was just so much fun.
You mentioned in the book Eddie Bennett, who was a New York Yankees bat boy. And you said he was a famous New York Yankees bat boy. He used to do things on the field with Babe Ruth before the game. What was that? What did you find out about Eddie Bennett?
Well, 18 years he was with the Yankees, and he was a shorter guy. He was an adult, but he had something with his spine that he didn't, you know, like a injury when he was a little kid. But he and Babe Ruth would practice throwing the ball, you know, and Babe would practice swinging and Eddie would duck underneath the bat and just clown around, jump on his back. You know, Yankee Stadium was different. The old Yankee Stadium was different from the new one. The crowd was much closer to the field. As a matter of fact, when you exited across the middle of the field, right out center field. People were basically hanging on the Yankees dugout. And so Babe Ruth would go out there and just kind of clown around and chat with everybody and sort of do a little entertaining. He was arguably an entertainer, really loved people and liked playing around with them. And Eddie Bennett was a good old boy.
And you also talk about some of the baseball history here. I'm going to take you to the Negro Leagues, which you have a couple of sidebars, I guess we would call them, on here. And it's very important to know that, you know, obviously they were excluded until 1947, but I think didn't they play in Yankee Stadium?
For 25 years. People don't even know that.
Yeah.
So as a matter of fact, let's put a little call out there because they're trying to make July 5th Negro Leagues Day in Yankee Stadium. However, the Yankees are not cooperating, but if there are any important Yankee people out there, think about it, because they had a benefit game in Yankee Stadium to benefit the Pullman porters. And those were the guys that worked on the trains, the Pullman. Mm-hmm. They had a benefit in the stadium, and everybody came and watched it. They raised tons of money. It was all over the paper. And then from then on, if anybody knows anything about the Negro Leagues, there were a few Negro Leagues fields, but mostly they played wherever they could. And the Negro Leagues that played in Yanko Stadium, and it wasn't just one home team. It would be whoever came in, a couple, and a lot of them are called the Giants of this, the Giant this or Giant that. But for 25 years, they used Yankee Stadium, and often they would draw bigger crowds than the Yankees did.
Yeah.
And everybody came. You know, the segregation was not in the minds of the fans. Segregation was in the mind of the team owners. You know, really, everybody went to every game, and the Negro Leagues games were huge and fabulous and high scoring, although they were not necessarily recorded. So we don't have the stats.
Right.
So and so I put in the book Josh Gibson. Josh Gibson was a famous Negro Leagues player who died young. Rumor has it, and it might be true, that he was the only, the first guy to hit the ball out of Yankee Stadium. And they say that he may have hit a ball 700 yards. And if he had lived, or it, not even lived, if his home runs had been tracked, he might have hit 1,000 home runs.
Right. Yeah. We've heard the story about Josh Gibson being the tremendous power hitter, but records being as it were. It's recorded, I think, in the Baseball Reference site, he had only 157, but doesn't include the barnstorming, doesn't include the traveling. It's just those recorded baseball games. So, yeah, Josh Gibson has, and Josh Gibson is in the Hall of Fame, thankfully, and that happened in 1972. Yes. But, yeah, he was a great player.
And in the book, Kelly, you mentioned Louisville Slugger and the bats. And it caught my attention because that we actually have Traeger. We talk about Traeger on our show, Traeger Pellet Grills, and they actually have Louisville Slugger is such a famous bat that they have pellets, Louisville Slugger limited edition pellets, where they went to the factory and they closed down for a couple of days apparently, and they took all the shavings and everything, and they made these maple flavored pellets, and they're called Louisville Slugger limited edition. So when I saw that in the book, I was quite fascinated because I think Louisville Slugger was very old, over 100 years old, the bat company, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think I want to say 130 or 133 years. Now in Louisville, in the Louisville Slugger Museum, they are having a month-long celebration. So if you go there now, they have this special exhibit up that is all about Louisville Slugger history. But Honus Wagner, I think it was in 1905, and I might be lying, but Honus Wagner was the first sports figure to endorse a product, and it was the Louisville Slugger bat.
Oh, okay.
And the Louisville Slugger bat was made by a kid that was 17 years old.
How about that?
His dad had a furniture factory, and he was a big baseball player, big baseball guy. One of the pro players broke his bat, and this kid went home and made him a bat. And then his dad did not want to sell Louisville Slugger bats. The kid wanted it, and then now look at it. It's Hildebrand. They've made their name.
Yeah.
They're no longer making chairs.
Well, what's interesting as well is before the bats were regulated, you talked about how they were made from wagon wheel spokes and all these things. And even you mentioned a bat that had a curve to it so that when the ball was hit, it would go in an odd direction. All these things in this book that, yeah, Jeff, you are right, coffee table book. Mm-hmm. This is a perfect coffee table book. That's what this book is.
Yes. I want to ask you about traditions, Kelly. The Star-Spangled Banner started a tradition. It was started in 1918 World Series. And you have and I guess Susanna Cavelli has a illustration of a marching band doing the Star-Spangled Banner. So that started in 1918 and continues to this day. And I got to tell you, I went to the ball game the other day, and everybody stood up. Well, a lot of people stood up for the national anthem. But I got to say, there's many able-bodied people who just sat there, which disappointed me. But that's a story for another day. But 1918, this started.
During World War One, Babe Ruth was pitching for the Sox on the mound. And they said that it was one of the most boring games in history, that everybody was asleep in the seats. And the band leader started playing this is where the seventh inning stretch came from.
Oh.
It was boring. It was miserable. It was the seventh inning. And they started playing the Star Spangled Banner, which was not the national anthem then. It was a rousing song. One of the players was in the military, and he stood and he crossed himself. I mean, he covered his heart. They said that the whole stadium filled with people. They all started singing. People were crying. It was just a moment not to be forgotten. And then later, the first time it was played for the World Series, and from then on, it became a tradition.
Yeah. Just things like that just started a tradition. But you also have Take Me Out to the Ball Game in this book.
And Peanuts and Cracker Jacks. Yep.
Peanuts and Cracker Jacks. Yes. The song is Take Me Out to the Ball Game. It's actually a song about a gentleman who wants to take his date to a show. And she goes, no, I want to take me out to the ball game.
Take me out to the ball game. I know Kelly's going to join me. Take
I will.
Me out to the crowd. Nobody's going to sing with
buy
me.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever
get back.
Or it's root for the, we don't home. Tell that part.
The home team.
If we don't mean it. So the brothers who wrote that song had never been to a baseball game.
Isn't that amazing?
Is that incredible? It was years later when they finally went.
Did they see something on a train, I think? Is that what it was? They saw like an ad or something on a train for a game, and they write the song. And right, they had the two of them had never seen a game.
It's just, and look at, well, it's fun because I'll go and visit kids in school, and I'll start doing exactly what you did. I'll start singing that song, and they will join right in. It's like everybody knows. It's so much. It's very fun. These traditions.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask you also, talking about Babe Ruth, you have some of his statistics in here, and this is unbelievable kind of the type of statistics he has. I mean, 393, Yankees all-time highest batting average, 393. Not too shabby. You know, obviously 715 home runs. I didn't know 659 of those were for the Yankees. I knew the last three were for the Braves, Boston Braves. But I didn't know 659 of the 714 were for the Yankees. That was interesting to me.
We know from last season, man, Shohei Ohtani, if he didn't do anything else, he brought Babe Ruth's name up a million times because he finally broke records that Babe Ruth set. But there are still records that Babe Ruth set that will never be broken. And part of that is because players don't play as much as they did. And when he first started pitching, for instance, when he went to the outfield because he wanted to play more games, he was playing every single game. If he wasn't pitching, he was in the outfield.
Right.
Nobody's going to do that anymore.
No. And but Babe Ruth, I've always thought, I always wondered that, you know, he was suspended a couple of times. So that brought down his home run, number of home runs. Also, when he played, you mentioned the foul lines. They did not have foul poles, so it was up to the umpires to judge if it was fair or foul. So he could have had more home runs. Some of those foul balls should have been fair. So he could have had a lot more if he was on the straight and narrow, which we knew he liked to go out and carouse a little.
He caroused and he got into a lot of fights. And then one of those, what you're talking about, he went barnstorming. One of his biggest suspensions came about because he went on a barnstorming tour in those days, for people who are listening, if the team had won the World Series, they were not allowed to go barnstorming. if they had lost the World Series, you could do whatever you wanted to do. But Babe Ruth, those guys met, that's how they made their money. Now, Babe Ruth made enough money. He didn't have to do it. But most professional ball players didn't make any money. They had to have another gig on the side. And barnstorming, they made more money barnstorming. They said Lou Gehrig, when he went out barnstorming the first time, he made more money barnstorming than he made all year playing baseball. And so Babe Ruth wanted to go. And not only that, but think about it. There was no baseball west of the Mississippi, no professional baseball.
Right.
There was no professional baseball south of St. Louis. And there was no television. So the only way you got to see anybody was if they came and you got to see them.
And Babe Ruth loved his fans and his fans loved him. So he felt he needed to go out and be there for his fans. Exactly. Obviously, the book ends with Babe Ruth hitting a home run, first home run at Yankee Stadium, the first of, I guess, 659 of them at Yankee Stadium. But you also talk about his called shot and the famous story of hitting one for a kid in the hospital.
And yeah, Johnny Sylvester. Yeah.
Johnny Sylvester, yeah, who I didn't know survived so long. I mean, he did live a full life. Babe Ruth hit one for him, and Lou Gehrig did not. Even though with in the movie, he did. He didn't.
There's a lot of talking about that movie. Yes, it's true. So when Babe Ruth was dying, Johnny Sylvester had been hit in the head by a horse, and his father was a mucky muck. Father contacted, it was during the series, and his father contacted the teams, and both of the teams sent baseballs to him. But Babe Ruth sent his own baseball and said, I'm going to hit a homer for you. He did. Later on, Babe Ruth wrote him a couple letters and went to see Johnny afterward. And then Johnny came to see him, and his father came to a game. But then when Babe Ruth was dying at the end of his life, Johnny Sylvester came to visit him. A lot of touching stories. It was so much fun, because if we talk about baseball back then, on those barnstorming games, they said that they could almost never finish a whole game because the fans would storm onto the field, steal all the baseballs, steal the bats, steal the bases. and so, you know, can you imagine? I mean, just crazy.
Yes.
So, Kelly, there's so many things that we haven't touched on in the book, interesting facts. You have about the first hats. I'm not going to say anything, but that was interesting. You have stock colors. That was interesting. There's so much. But you mentioned, I guess, before we came on, your grandsons, and you're a baseball family. But I want to know, let's learn a little more about you. Have you always loved baseball, and where did this love of baseball come from?
Well, turn to the opening page of that book, because the book is dedicated to my grandfather, who was a semi-pro baseball player. His name is Joe Silva. You mentioned I grew up in Santa Cruz. He was born in a town called Watsonville, which is close to Santa Cruz. And one of the reasons that games used to start at 3 o'clock in the afternoon was because people could work a full day of work and then get into their pickup trucks or their wagons or however, and go and play baseball. And he was a catcher. My grandfather got hit in the head. Now, imagine, this is before padding, and we cover that in the book too. As a matter of fact, Pop Lloyd, who is a Negro Leagues player, was also a catcher. And he got hit in the head in one game, in one eye and then the other eye. And then he went out the next day and bought a metal trash can and put it on his head to protect his face like that. And that's what they were up again. Well, my grandfather ended up, he would go and play with everybody. I want to say that the song of our youth, Saturday, Sunday in car rides, were baseball games playing in the background. Then when my kids were young, I played ball when I was a kid, because everybody did. But then I kept stats for my son and daughter when they played baseball. We love it. But I'm mostly a children's book writer. I write, when I'm not writing about Babe Ruth and baseball, I'm writing about goldfish and vampire babies and mm-hmm.
And dancing. Dance, y'all dance. And
exactly.
Not Norman. So, your daddy was just like you.
Yeah, daddy and mommy and
was that one of one of Babe Ruth's nicknames was Vampire Baby. I think that was another one.
Hey, now we'll put that in the next book. We can start our rumors going here. So this book came about, thank you for the baseball background, but I write a poem a day. I don't write good poems. I write just a poem. 7 minutes I take to write a poem, and it can be really lousy. I write them with another writer friend, and we email them back and forth to each other. If we miss a day, we have to pay a $50 fine publicly and loudly to the political party, not of our choosing. So we don't miss any days.
That's incentive.
it keeps you going. And we said we'd stop after an election, and that was the last time, and we're not stopping yet, so we keep doing it. But my writing partner for the poems, her name is Cindy, and she makes up the prompts. She made up a prompt one day about write a poem based on a nursery rhyme, and that was where the book came from. Mm-hmm. It came from the nursery rhyme that came into my head was the house that Jack built, and because I know baseball. But I have got to say, thank you. Brian Richards is the Yankees Museum curator.
Mm-hmm.
And so helpful in researching this book. And then the Library of Congress, we were digging out articles because, as I said to you, nothing was accurate. And it was all in black and white. And then the National Baseball Hall of Fame curators and the library curators, all of us, it was such a fabulous coming together. Everybody wants to make these facts correct. For so many kids, I hope this will be where they're going to start their baseball history. And we really wanted to make sure that it was accurate. And also for older people like you,
mm-hmm.
you know, give you a little something you didn't know, like the longest game and the shortest game.
Yeah, right.
So that I could start a family dialogue.
Absolutely. Have you taken your grandchildren to the Baseball Hall of Fame yet?
Yes, we have. We have. And as a matter of fact, two of my grandkids were just in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
It's spring break, so they were down in Baltimore, the Babe Ruth Birthplace Museum.
Yes.
He was born in Baltimore, and the Babe Ruth Birthplace Museum is right next to Camden Yards.
Mm-hmm.
So they went out there. And, okay, part of our family are Mets fans, and part of our family are Cubs fans. So we have to go to all the games.
Of course.
And sort of like, you know, we try not to talk about, you notice in the Take Me Out to the Ball Game, I did not announce my favorite team.
Right.
Don't do that part.
That was very wise.
Yeah, I've been to the Babe Ruth Museum years ago. I have to go back. I understand they expanded it since I've been there. So I've got to go back down there. It's a great museum.
It's three houses now. And mm-hmm. so interactive. A lot mm-hmm. of stuff for kids to do.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we mentioned Negro Leagues here also, that Len and I a couple weeks ago went to the Jackie Robinson Museum in Manhattan.
Yeah.
So if anybody hasn't gone there, it's also a very good place to go.
The museum is great. The Jackie Robinson Museum. And of course, you can't mention the Negro Leagues without mentioning the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City, which is outstanding.
Yes. Yes.
Phenomenal.
And the president of that is Bob Kendrick, and he also, if you ever have the opportunity to speak with him, you're in for a real treat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Kelly, tell us where people can get in touch with you. You have a website, if any other social media, so people can contact you, and especially people with small children. Great writer here. So where can people reach you?
Well, thanks, Fred. So my name's Kelly Bennett, and you can find me at kellybennett.com is my website. Facebook and Instagram, it's at Kelly Bennett Books. Twitter, it's at KG Bennett Books. It's very, it's really easy. Kelly Bennett. And the house that Ruth built is available everywhere. It's published by Familius. All the places that you want to buy books, please do support them. It is, I love being here, but I really appreciate your help. And I'm right now in the process of writing another book about Babe Ruth with his great grandson, Brent, and Brent's partner. They have a website called Babe Ruth Central.
Mm-hmm.
And he and Stu Dressler manage the website. And we're putting together a book of inspirational quotes and photographs about Babe Ruth.
Is that going to be a children's book, a young adult book?
I want, it's going to be more of a coffee table book. It's okay. going to be, I'm hoping it's a whole family book. It mm-hmm. has, what I found researching Babe Ruth was he is famous for saying a lot of things. A lot, you know, we all know about never let the fear of striking out keep you from swinging and variations yeah. of that.
That quote's in my son's room hanging up.
And he said a lot of, I'm not thinking of any of them right now, but at least 60 quotes sure. that are worth remembering. And so we put them together. I thought, you know, this is Babe Ruth came. A lot of people think he was an orphan. No. He was not an orphan. No. He came, his family, he's from the close to the docks. His parents were busy. His mom had 8 kids, 2 sets of twins in a short amount of years. And all Babe and one younger sister are the only ones that survived. Mm-hmm. So this typical busy young family. And he, they say now he would have been probably diagnosed as ADD, ADHD. He did not sit still. So whether it was because of the family or because of government, he was put into St. Mary's home for boys. That probably, that would be really tough. He thought he was 8. He was really 7 years old in a school with 800 boys. And they were immediately taught a trade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was going to be a tailor. Can a you tailor, imagine?
Yeah. He made great shirts.
Yeah.
yeah.
Taking care of your shirt. But that probably made all the difference for him. He also never really forgot where he came from. He liked little kids. You know, it's wonderful where you hear about him just stopping anywhere and playing ball and giving them hints and signing thousands of baseball at one time to be hit off the roof of a building. He's an inspiring guy. There's a reason why he's still famous.
Absolutely. The book is called The House That Ruth Built, talking to Kelly Bennett, illustrated by Susanna Cavelli. Wonderful book, Kelly. It was a pleasure talking to you, pleasure meeting you at Sabre, and good luck with the book. It's definitely going on my coffee table.
Oh, thank you. Well, Leo and Jeff, thanks for having me. I've had a great time. I hope you and listeners have too.
Absolutely.
We have. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it very much.
See you at a ball game.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast. And if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Lynn. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
And thank you, Kelly Bennett, for joining us on Baseball and BBQ. You know, Len, I had the pleasure of meeting Kelly at a Sabre event earlier this year, and she was just the nicest person.
That's how you got her, right? Yeah. You met her at the event, mm-hmm. charmed her.
Yes, of course.
And she agreed to come on.
of course.
no, that's, yeah, that's a great. Speaking of, Jeff, you mentioned Sabre, right?
Yes.
Why don't we give them a plug? You know, we've had Bruce McClure.
Yes.
It's a great organization. And we weren't planning on this, but why don't you just tell, you were involved with Sabre first. What have you gotten out of it?
Just the connections, the friendships we've made, just talking to people just about baseball. They're just baseball junkies. And it's just
right.
It's just a great community to be involved in. I'm involved with the pictorial committee. I post all the debuts of every major leaguer coming into the league. I've done that several years now. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful organization.
I don't know what made me want to give them a plug, but they are wonderful. If you are a baseball fan, and like you said, baseball junkie, oh, you will lose yourself in this organization. You know what else you might lose yourself in is if you go to baseballbbq.com and you click on that website and you see their incredible grilling tools and accessories, you're going to love it. And you're going to want to have some because, let's face it, it is grilling season. And if you're going to have that same old spatula or tongs or cutting board, Jeff, a cutting board shaped like home plate.
Yeah. And a player's uniform, which can be personalized with anything right. you want on it.
So you could put OC on the back.
Yeah.
Right. You could put Hollywood yeah. on the back.
And they have certain licenses for colleges as well.
Yeah. And they have so many great.
Check out their website.
So many great things. And now I think I've got a great thing.
It's time for the quote of the week.
The only time to eat diet food is while you're waiting for the barbecue to cook. If you can tell me who said that, I will do mime for the next show.
Well, you just said it.
Okay. And when I say mime, it means I won't talk at all the next show. All right. That was said by Julia Child.
Oh, the famous Julia Child.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jeff, what do you got?
I want to tell you that if you want to reach the show, give us a call at 516-855-8214. You know, we do have a website, www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. We have a Facebook page. Leave a comment on our Facebook page, Baseball and BBQ. We have an X at Baseball and BBQ. Instagram is Baseball and Barbecue, with barbecues all spelled out. And our email is baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends.
And Jeff, we are on all the podcast platforms.
And Amazon Music now.
Yeah, Amazon Music, iHeart, Apple, Spotify. I love it. We're everywhere. And you know who is going to be everywhere eventually? Our next guest. Because Nick Wilson, the Big Unk, his products are going to take over the world. No, I don't know about that, but they are pretty cool. And I think you're really going to enjoy this interview with Nick Wilson. You know, baseball and barbecue listeners, it's amazing how things work. The connections that you make with people that we've made with this show. In episode 236, we had Jeremy Wayland. And of course, we're doing our research on Jeremy Wayland. And I came upon a website. And when I got there, I was struck by the beautiful artwork. Now, it's a website where rubs are sold. But the labels on these rubs, the artwork is beautiful. So I did some investigating. I was like, reached out to them, reached out to our guest. He responded, and the rest, they say, is history, right? So now, we always say everyone has a story. And we get the chance to speak to Nick Wilson, who is Big Unk. And we are very excited to welcome Nick Wilson, a.k.a. Big Unk, to the Baseball and Barbecue Podcast. Welcome, Nick.
Welcome, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. It's an honor and privilege to be here.
Isn't it amazing how those things happen, right?
It is. This world is incredibly small. I tell you, it gets smaller every day.
Yeah. And Jeremy came to us because he was, you know, he won the college Traeger game day. Our friend and frequent guest co-host, Doug Scheiding, referred him to us. So it's just, it's great the way it works. We're very happy that you joined us. And let's get right into it, because you do have, if they taste half as good as the labels look, then they're awesome. Tell us about the company, how you got to the rubs. I mean, I want to hear everything about it and these beautiful labels.
Yeah, well, thank you kindly. So first and foremost, when it comes down to the labels, art is life for me, right? If you can see inside of my office here, my walls are filled with artwork. You know, when we were kids, you know, a lot of my friends, they would have posters up of Lamborghinis and Ferraris, or they'd have swimsuit models up on their walls and things like that. I had artwork on my walls. I had posters of Boris Vallejo. I'm covered in tattoos. You know, art is something that means an awful lot to me. After it was determined that I was going to release my seasonings, which we'll get into how that came about as well.
Yeah.
I knew I had to nail it on these labels. I wanted them to really just speak my story. I sought out an artist that I thought would do a really, really good job. He just happens to be a local guy to me as well. Matter of fact, he's one of our jiu-jitsu coaches. he's an incredible artist, and I sought him out. I gave him my vision, and he executed beyond what I thought was even possible. So I wish I could take the credit for the amazing artwork on here. I just gave him the vision, and he came through and came with the end result for us. So really, really happy with him.
Well, the artwork, as they say in the business, pops. I mean, it really grabs your attention.
Yeah.
And I can tell by the first one here, the old purpose of it, looks like you were the model for that one.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. So the Big Uncle All Purpose, you can see right here on the label, it's got me on the label. And all of the other ones, you know, obviously the direction I gave him, it wasn't too much, right? I said, as an example, I want a chicken that's, you know, handing over a plate of chicken. That's kind of more or less the lines that I'd given him. And so, what he produced was amazing.
So you want a cannibal chicken. Right?
Exactly right. Exactly right. But I didn't want anything too cartoonish. A lot of times you'll see a lot of the labels out these days are they've got some amazing artwork as well, some really cool cartoon figures. You know, I think back to, you know, when we were kids, Garfield and Friends, right? Do you remember that cartoon?
Of course.
Yeah. So they would have those like kind of episodes within the episode where it was the farm animals and things, right? And I feel like a lot of labels that we see these days have those kind of animals on them, that style of artwork. And I just wanted something a little bit different from that. And so happy with the way that he represented the brand for me.
And I just have one more on the artwork, because obviously it's what gets you noticed.
Yes, sir.
I'm wondering who the model was for Old Smokey.
Old Smokey, believe it or not, there's no actual model for Old Smokey.
Could be you, Jeff.
Yeah, could be.
Could be you.
Jeff is known as the old coot, so.
I just wanted kind of like an old hillbilly, right? That's what I said. I wanted like an old hillbilly, someone that you could think running the farm, so to speak, was for Old Smokey. But Sugar Mama, that actually is my wife.
Oh.
My wife is the... is the inspiration for Sugar Mama, as well as the sauce. I've got my barbecue sauce, Saucy Mama. My wife is a Gemini, and she's got two different personalities. So if you see them side by side, the Sugar Mama and the Saucy Mama, you'll see the other one's a little bit, you know, kind of punk rockish.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, okay. So for people that they're like, okay, I got to find this. You guys are talking about the artwork. I got to find it. So Nick, let's tell them so they can, you know, kind of look along as we're talking about this. The website, there's two ways to get to it, right? It's strongarmbarandgrill.com.
Yes, sir.
And the other one is
bigunkbbqrubs.com.
All right. So everybody could see these labels. We're going to talk about what's in the bottles, but I have another one on the labels as well. And that is, except for Old Smokey, and then under sauces, Max Payne, everybody is blindfolded.
Correct. Everyone's got the bandanas.
Yeah. So what's with that?
So I get that question oftentimes, right? People want to know, hey, does it mean something? Does it mean you can't see me? Does it mean, you know, there's really, it's artist choice on that one. It's the style of the artwork that that the artist does, right? So a lot of the characters that he creates, he puts bandanas over their eyes. So it's just, as luck would have it, I didn't ask for it at all. It's what he produced for me, and that's just kind of how we came about. When it came to the Old Smokey, he chose to not do it. Max Payne is a collaboration that I did with a UFC fighter. So I really wanted to make sure we had his likeness. So that's why Max doesn't have any bandana covering his eyes whatsoever. You can see his full face. But
Max, good question, though. Max Payne is ripped, I can tell you that. So
okay. Is that what happens when you eat that rub? You get...
because I need absolutely. A
bottle if that
Nick, so tell us, how did you enter the barbecue rubs market?
Okay, great question. So I built a outdoor kitchen at my home, right? I kind of did things a little bit different, and in short, I ended up ultimately pivoting into the rub business. But what I did is I built an outdoor kitchen with the idea of running private parties and catering and whatnot from my home, being able to put on private dinners and things like that. And what I did is I built it first, and then I went to go get all of the permits for the business to offer this private dining. And unfortunately, in my county, they don't allow it. And when they shut me down, obviously I was heartbroken, but they did present me with some alternatives, some things that people that, you know, are into cooking and doing what I like to do, which is barbecue all the time. They gave me my options of what some people can do. So they told me, you know, you can sell your, you can sell nuts, you can sell trail mix, you can sell desserts, you can sell all of these things, but because it has to do with proteins that need to be cooked to a certain temperature before serving, or they need to be eaten within a certain time frame of reaching set temperature, you're not allowed to do that from your home. You have to do it in a commercial kitchen. It's just all food safety guidelines and regulations there. As with a lot of things that you need to do in business, I had to pivot, right? And one of the options that they gave me is that I could release my seasonings. So my initial response to that was not a chance, you know, it's not something that I want to do, right? I want to kind of keep that near and dear to me. That's why I love to cook. That's why people love my food. And that only lasted for a couple of days. After a couple of days, I said, you know what, we're going to go ahead and do it. I'm going to do some research. I'm going to find out how I can release these and mass produce them. And I did my research. I sought out a few different co-packers, and after vetting out a few of them, I landed where I've landed, and you know, the rest is history, as they say. You know, I kind of went all in. I released the first six. I didn't want to just go with one and hit the market with my all-purpose as an example. I did want to release the first six together, and the response was tremendous. You know, I don't know what the reason for that was. Obviously, like you guys are saying, the labels, I get a ton of feedback on the labels. I get a lot of people that mention to me that, you know, I see this on the shelf and I go for that. I grab that first over the other ones because they just look so cool to me, right? So I think the artwork might have a lot to do with it. And then people buy it and they use it. They share it online. And it's kind of been a spiraling into what it is today, you know? And as time went on, I ended up releasing a few more flavors and the sauces. And, you know, we've got a lot that's still in the pipe. You know, I've got more rubs in mind to get released as we move on. I don't want to have too many SKUs, though. You know, that's something that you can oversaturate. Right. And something I definitely don't want to do. But I'm looking to offer also additional products as well. We have a lot of merch. You know, I've got T-shirts, shot glasses, flags. You know, exclusive here. We're going to be doing some bandanas here pretty soon.
Nice. Okay.
Kind of go along with the brand.
Right.
But the idea is anything and everything that you could need for your bar or your grilling, right? So Nice. If you keep that in mind, you can kind of get an idea of some of the things that are going to be released here in the future.
Very nice. You build this outdoor kitchen.
Yes, sir.
And without checking, I think you just wanted an outdoor kitchen, but whatever.
I'm not going to lie. I really did. I mean, first and foremost, I did build that for me because, I mean, it's a passion. We all love doing it. We all love cooking. We all love hanging out there. And I love to entertain. So I still have my parties. I definitely throw a lot of parties out there. I just don't, you know, there's no financial benefit to throwing these parties these days, you know.
You know, a question, you know, we wouldn't be a barbecue podcast if we didn't ask this question is, you know, how did you come to barbecue and know how much you loved it? Because it is true. There is something about the first time, whether it's, you know, your parents are barbecuing, and I was going to say dad, but then that sounds sexist because mother's barbecue too. But, you know, you want to grab the tongs from your parents and, you know, start, or you light the fire for the first time. What was it that just started you on that barbecue journey?
Well, you basically nailed it right there. I lost my pop when I was just a little boy. My dad passed away when I was 12 years old.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. And so it was from my mom. You know, my mom did everything to support us three boys. And she did a lot of barbecuing. She really enjoyed barbecuing. You know, where I was raised here in California, we cook a lot of tri-tip here, right? So in our home, we had a lot of tri-tip, a lot of burgers, not so much the steaks, right? I didn't really come from a family with money, but we did the best we could. And I learned to learn to cook tri-tip at a very young age. You know, me and my younger brother both really took cooking as something that we really enjoyed doing. So we've both been doing it for a very long time. My oldest brother, he also cooks too. He's a little bit more chefy. Until just fairly recently, he got his first, you know, pellet smoker. He's been using his brand new pellet smoker a lot lately. But I tell you, it's been something I've been doing since I was about 15 years old, cooking fairly religiously. And I've been on my own since I was 15, moved out of the house as a sophomore in high school. And, you know, you got to learn how to take care of yourself. And cooking was something that I started out doing as a necessity, right, in order to keep myself fed. And then I fell in love with the response that I got from people, right, sharing my food. Kind of like I told you, I was really into art growing up, right? Mm-hmm. I was also unique in the sense that on TV, I wasn't into watching, you know, G.I. Joe and things like that. I grew up watching The Frugal Gourmet and watching Yong Kin Cook and Emeril Lagasse. And, you know, those were the shows that I watched as a kid. I've always been inspired by great chefs. We didn't really have too much barbecue content. I remember Bobby Flay came out around maybe 1996 or so. And the only reason I remember that is it was during the Atlanta Olympic Games, right? I got really heavy into watching Bobby Flay as well. And that kind of really started piquing my interest towards barbecue.
You know, Nick, I'm looking at your website and there's a picture on there of your, it looks, might be your backyard. It looks beautiful, by the way. And I see a couple of grills on it. I can't tell the type of a brand of grills, but tell us, what do you have out there?
Yeah, so I've got a Weber Genesis propane grill that I've gifted to my sons, right? That's what they started to learn on, right? Something that was real easy to moderate the temperature. I've got a couple of Traegers back there. I built in a Traeger Silverton 810. I've got the brand new Traeger Timberline XL. That's the new big dog Traeger grill. Comes with an induction burner. It's incredible. I've got a Weber kettle out there. I had a custom rig built. It's a half Santa Maria grill. The other half is an open fire cage. And that is probably the most fun is the new rig that I've gotten last year. So we basically got a little bit of everything. I've got a pizza oven out there. I've got a flat rock griddle, which is also made by Traeger. So anything that you could need, if you're going to come over to the house and you want to barbecue, you want to cook something up, we've got everything you need out there to have a good time.
Len, let's go to the parties.
Yeah, let's go. Well,
Jeff, I was about to ask a question, but I'm on with the airline. I'm booking our flight.
Okay. So.
Come on out, gentlemen. The next party is August 3rd, the Big Unk Bash.
Oh, wow. The Big Unk Bash. If I was like Barbara Walters or something, I would say 15 moved out. But all I'm going to say is it had to be. It couldn't have been easy at 15 to be on your own. So that's got to be something.
It wasn't easy, but it's all I knew. I didn't know anything different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got
people. In retrospect, when I look back at it, it's a lot wilder and crazier. But in the moment, it's all that I knew. You know,
right?
I wasn't like emancipated or anything crazy. There's no horror story behind it or anything. In short, what happened was my mom had moved out. She moved out to the country, bought a little farm, and had room for my little brother. And my older brother and I, we had to figure out what we were going to do, you know? Gotcha. So I made it work. You know, I'd already been working. I've worked since I was 14 years old.
Right.
I've always had a job. I just made it work, you know, bounced around from friends' house on their couches. Was really, really lucky. I'm married to my high school sweetheart, and her mom and ultimately let me move in with her. And that was like my solid foundation, was being able to move in and live with my girlfriend and her family. you know.
Very nice. So I want to ask you, do you have any nieces and nephews who called you Big Unk, or how did you come up with the name?
Yeah. So are you guys familiar with what that term means, Big Unk? What a Big Unk is?
No, but
no.
Now I gotta Google it.
No, I'll tell you. A Big Unk is someone you go to for advice. It's someone you go to, you know, let's say, for example, you don't have a father figure. A Big Unk is someone that you would be your father figure, right? A Big Unk is someone that is in your community. He's the guy while you were growing up that was up the street that, you know, he would change out your inner tubes for you when your bike went flat. He's the guy that would just kind of look out for everybody. That's what a Big Unk is. So I carry that name incredibly proudly, and I do everything I can to live up to that as well.
Yeah. We are talking to Nick Wilson, who is Big Unk. Nick, you know better than anyone that the rub game, and most of your products are rubs. You do have a couple of sauces, but mostly yes, rubs. But the rub game is tough. Not easy to make it. But, you know, we recently interviewed Byron Chisholm, Byron's butt rub, right? One product, and he just recently passed 50 million in sales. But that's what we all aspire to, right? Your rubs, where people go to them, they see the label, they're beautiful, they try them, and they go back. What is the distinctive flavors in your rubs that stands out above other rubs?
Okay, so first and foremost, I don't ever like speaking negatively about any of my competitors. I have nothing bad to say about any of them. I love most of these rubs that you all use as well, right? Mm-hmm. So I use everything from the Whiskey Bent, the Blazing Stars, the 187 Barbecue is another newer rub company that was just recently released. I use everyone's stuff, so I don't say any of this with any kind of negativity. But I think what differentiates me from a lot of those other rub manufacturers is I use less sodium in mine than what I see in a lot of other rubs. I go with flavor first, and I don't pack a ton of heat in my rubs. I don't have. So if you're someone that wants something that's really, really spicy, I would strongly recommend something like the Blazing Star Reaper or Scorpion rub. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have anything that's, you know, really spicy. I try to gear my rubs to something that your kids are going to love. I have very strong recommendations for the families that their kids are really into chicken nuggets and macaroni and cheese. And we want to try to pull them away from, you know, your McDonald's and your frozen dino nuggets and still have great flavor that the kids are going to love. And that's like my Loco Pollo is perfect for that, you know. But I do have strong flavor profiles, you know, nothing too crazy. Cayenne is probably the spiciest pepper that you're going to find in any of my rubs. You know, I don't have anything too crazy, no ghost peppers, no, nothing like that. Okay. So that's kind of what I think would differentiate me from everyone else. They're also real clean, right? No MSG, non-GMO, you know, but again, I think a lot of us are in that category these days.
You know, Nick, I never asked some, I mean, we've had so many rub and sauce companies on, and we're so grateful that the barbecue business is booming and that everyone can, you know, there's room for everyone.
Yes.
But I never asked this question, so I'm going to ask you. Have you ever had a product where it was bottled, it was sold, you used it, everything was good about it, but then you just one day you said, you know, it might be better if I add this. Do you ever do that and ever change anything?
I haven't yet. I haven't changed any recipes yet. But at the same token, I'm still fairly new, right? Mm-hmm. I'm only 2 years in. But what I do is I don't try to build my flavor profiles just for me, for what I like. I try to do it for the masses. So with that being said, not everything is exactly to what I would prefer. I try to do something that everyone enjoys, that everyone likes, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. I haven't made any changes yet. I don't anticipate making any changes. I make a lot of changes while it's in the R&D stages.
Gotcha.
You know, that's definitely where I make my changes.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I have asked that question of authors who, you know, because I know even when I'm doing an email, I go back an hour later and I'm like, oh, I should change this. I should change that. And when an author puts a book out and it's out there, and I've asked, you know, have they gone back and said, oh, I wish I had written this. And, you know, so I said, why not? You know, but I guess there is always the potential to do that, you know, to restaurants change their menus. So I'm not saying you ever will. I was just asking. So that I appreciate the answer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I get, if I was going to do anything, I'd maybe change something to add more spice and make something a little spicier, because that's something I get a lot of feedback on is, oh man, I wish you had something that's really spicy. You know, I wish you had something that's really spicy. Those are the only things I've ever even thought of doing. But again, I'd probably just rather release something new anyway, as opposed to changing up a formula.
So, Nick, you said you've been in this business around 2 years, right?
Yes, sir.
But you have a network out there of nephews, I should say, as you have on it. I mean, they're all over the country. We're talking Minnesota, Utah, Canada, obviously California, Colorado, Jersey, Arizona. So how did you partner up with these guys?
So I get a lot of interest. I get a lot of people just about every day reaching out, and they want to be a part of the team. They want to come on board. I kind of vet them out my own specific way. Communications first. I need to be able to communicate with these guys because I need to be able to have, I put a lot of trust in these guys as well, because I share with them. I let them know what I'm doing. I let them know what I'm planning. I let these guys know what's coming down the pipeline. And first and foremost, I need to be able to trust that whatever I speak on that's unreleased and it's not meant for the public consumption yet, I need to know that it's going to be private. It's going to stay private. Outside of that, you know, it's the ethic. It's the work ethic. I'm not too caught up on the followers and stuff like that, right? I don't have any requirement. I'm not looking to build the biggest network of following, right? When I'm choosing these guys, it just has to do a lot with a gut feeling, right? Mm-hmm. And these guys are so much more than just brand ambassadors. It's why I call them nephews, because these guys are family to me. I've flown out and met almost all of them. I just got back from Salt Lake City yesterday, or the day before yesterday. I got back from Salt Lake City, and there were about six of us out there together. Not only were we out there on the same trip, we got an Airbnb together. We ate together. We partied together. We had a good time. You know, we're there for each other for much more than just barbecue. You know, as we all know, this is a tough life that we live, and we've got ups and downs. I mean, my guys have gotten married. My guys have gotten divorced. My guys have had tragedy strike their families. And, you know, we're all here for each other. And so I seek out people that I feel comfortable bringing into that tight knit of a circle. So that's how I choose them, I would say. Yeah.
So, Nick, you also have a podcast called
Yes,
Big
Sir.
Unk and the Nephew. It's not enough that you have these successful rubs. Now you got to hone in on the podcast business.
I'm telling you, I'm trying. This was a, you know, you mentioned him earlier, Nick Keith. That's a Heat Strokes Outdoor Cooking. Nick came over. We were at a barbecue party. Like I was saying, I throw a lot of parties back here. Towards the end of the night, I had a guy over here that I really, really admire. And towards the end of the night, I really just wanted to get to know him a little bit better. It'd been the first time I'd ever met him. I just started asking him a bunch of questions, trying to get to know him. Well, unbeknownst to me, everyone kind of stopped what they were doing and were kind of honed in on the questions I was asking him. A couple of times people would chime in and say, man, I've always wanted to know that. I've never even asked that. I didn't even know how to ask that. And by the end of the night, Heatstroke came up to me and he goes, you need to do that. We need to do a podcast. And I'll go ahead and I'll try to organize as much as I can. I need you to talk to these people and ask these questions and things like that. So the idea was just brought up spur of the moment at a barbecue party that we had had. It's the brainchild of Heatstroke. Heatstroke came up with the idea. And, you know, if my guys come to me and they say, hey, man, you know what I'd really like to do? I'm going to do everything in my power to make it happen, you know, and that's exactly what we're doing. So we just finished our, I know we're not 7 years in by any stretch. we did just finish our 13th episode, and
that's very, impressive.
Very happy about that. Yeah. You know, we've got our pretty far booked out, you know, right away. I want to say we launched it in April or so. We immediately booked all the way out to August and kind of closed the books, right? Didn't want to be booking people too much further out than that.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm really excited. Every week we have someone new on that's just a whole new level of excitement. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
you guys
yeah. get
the same thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Have you guys had a chance to meet with Mike at Blazing Star Barbecue yet?
We had him on.
Yeah, see? Yeah. So yeah. Mike's going to be on Big Unc and the Nephew. Incredibly excited about that. I've met him in person. We've hung out a few times now, and he's awesome. He's awesome.
Let me just say this about Big Mike. Oh yeah.
I don't want to be left out.
Mike's an amazing guy, and I'm excited to have him on board. And I can say the same thing about a lot of these guys that we've had on. Every single person that's come on the show has been a phenomenal guest. I don't know, you guys, since you've been doing it for 7 years, I'm not sure if you guys still have any of the nervousness or the butterflies as you're going into an episode. Oh man, I hope this goes well. I hope the guest enjoys his time here.
Every time we go on.
We had right? it with you.
Yeah.
I'm here. I'm like, Jess, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, no, it's but yeah, I understand what you're saying. You definitely I still have it once in a while. I mean, but you know, we kind of, yeah, you do get in a pattern or whatever, but we still get the same excitement out of doing this show. Not that you're interviewing us, but that when we started, but to do 13 episodes is impressive because usually podcasts, what is it? They don't make it. Is it five?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you're seeing it's not just coming on and interviewing. It's, and you got to prep for the interview. We have authors. You got to read the books, you know, and then it's the editing. It's the booking the guests. It's the time. It's we write show notes. You know, it's all. So, you know, it's a lot. So
a lot, yes.
Congratulations on episode 13.
Yes.
On making it to 13. It's called Big Unc and the Nephew. I found it on my regular podcast app. So it's everywhere. But I suggest, I think everyone will enjoy it. It's very conversational.
Yes, sir.
And I mean, I know we're conversational, but it's almost like it's more just guys being real guys, you know? And it's
absolutely
good. It's really good. And enjoy it very much. So keep doing it.
So, Nick, I'm going to reel it back to the rub business because, you know, you are in the business to sell rubs. Rub sauces, merchandise. So let everybody know where they can get it. And do you sell, is it in stores or is it just all through mail order?
Oh, yeah. It's you can definitely go directly to my website and order everything through standard e-commerce. You know, I'm a one-man operation here. So if you go on my website, if you start chatting with the chat robot, it's me. I'm going to be the one answering your questions. I'm the one that's going to be packing up your order and shipping it out to you. So if you want to support, you can go directly to my website and buy it. But it's also, I'm also in several retailers, right? I love these guys. So a bunch of small shops, mom and pop shops, barbecue stores. I haven't landed on any of the big retailer shelves, right? So you're not going to find me in the Safeway or the Raley's or the Ace stores just yet. But you can definitely find me. If you're in Florida, you can find me at Whiskey at Barbecue. I'm at Bakersfield Barbecue Quarters down in Southern California. SenCal Smoke out here in the Valley, Central Valley here in California. I'm in a handful of retailers, but predominantly most of my sales is directly through my e-commerce and through any event that I go to, right? I go to a lot of events and sell my rubs in person, which frankly is my absolute favorite thing to do. because I don't take a sales approach anywhere, right? If you go on my social media, I'm not hard pressing. I'm not creating commercials for my products and pushing them that way. I like to just be organic and let the product speak for itself. But when I'm out at one of these events and I actually get to be face to face with my customers, oh, I have a blast selling my product, speaking on my product. You know, I like to get to know the people that are coming up to buy. What are they cooking? Give them recommendations on what to buy. I make sauces out of my rubs, like a dip, right? I make dips mm-hmm. out of my rubs so that people can taste them right then and there. It's really no greater feeling than being live in front of people and having some of your prior customers come up to your booth and start selling your product on your behalf. Oh man, guys, you gotta try that Blaze beef. It's unbelievable. My husband never knew how to cook a steak. I could never eat his steaks. And now I'm eating his steaks all the time because of this Blaze beef. You know, that sort of a compliment that you get face to face, it's hard to beat that.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask you, before we forget, give us your social media, because I know it's strongarmbarandgrill.com, but also bigunkbbq.com. But you also have other social media, so let us know what that is.
Yeah, so you can find me at Strong Arm Bar and Grill. That's my main page. That's where you're going to find me cooking with anything and everything. And you can kind of follow along on my journey. You know, that's where when I'm traveling, when I'm having fun going out with my boys, you know, that's my personal page, so to speak. And then my business page is Big Unk Barbecue Rubs, BBQ Rubs. So at Big Unk BBQ Rubs. Mm-hmm. So the same as the social media platforms, those are also the website. So strongarmbarandgrill.com as well as bigunkbbqrubs.com. It'll redirect you back to the shop here on the website.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thank you,
Nick. We appreciate it very much. You said you're very much into art. We all know cooking is one of the most beautiful arts. We know that.
It certainly is. I consider it an art form. I don't consider it a skill. I consider it an art form for sure.
Yeah. And we're very happy that our journey, our research journey with Jeremy Wayland led us to you. And I'm very happy. Everyone has a story, as you know, from having your podcast. And I'm very glad we got to share your story. And it's going to continue. I see great things for Big Unk, and you certainly are a Big Unk. So,
and let me just say this before you go. I just clicked on your shop, the Big Unk Wagyu Pack, and it's 8 of your rubs.
Yes, sir.
But that could be a poster because of the artwork. So, you know, we started out with the artwork. We're going to end with the artwork because this looks really great. You can put up on a wall. It's a fun thing to look at.
I appreciate that. Thank you kindly. Well, be on the lookout. I think you're seeing into the future here right now, Jeff.
Okay.
Jeff is the seer, the great seer.
Yes, right.
Nick, thank you for joining us. We're very happy you came on Baseball and Barbecue.
Pleasure was all mine, gentlemen. Thank you so very kindly for the invite. Bye now.
Thank you very much, Nick, or I'll call him Big Unk. That was very enjoyable. You know,
yes,
what, Jeff?
It was.
I enjoyed that. But I was going to tell everyone that we are brought to you by, but I will not.
I just want to say something. You know, Darryl Strawberry just got his number retired at Citi Field. And I couldn't attend. I was at a wedding. My nephew got married. He wouldn't move the date of the wedding, so I couldn't attend the ceremony. That's another story. But, you know, so Saturday was the ceremony and Sunday was a giveaway. They gave away Darryl Strawberry bobblehead dolls. This is something that bothers me. They only limit it to 15,000 bobblehead dolls for the stadium that holds 40,000. That's a little more than 35% of capacity. I mean, you people come early, they wait in line, and then you're going to, you know, not everybody's guaranteed a bobblehead. You know, I feel that if you're going to have a giveaway, give away to everybody. And these bobbleheads, they show up on eBay and the secondary sites before the day of the event. I know they're sponsored. And if the sponsor doesn't want to make any more, then, you know what, get another sponsor. Geez, Steve Cohen is rich enough to subsidize it. And this is just not a Mets thing. Let me just say that. It happens at most stadiums. They only limit it to 15,000 or depending on the capacity of the stadiums, but it's they really cutting down. which is, I think it's horrible, but that's just me.
Yeah. Jeff, was that a rant?
That was a semi-rant. Yeah, Barry was asking me if I'm going to rant about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know what, though? That's a great point, because it's like, how early should you get to the stadium to be one of the first 15,000?
Right.
Right. Why won't people move weddings? We missed out on the London, on Mr. Met in a London phone booth bobblehead.
Exactly.
Now you missed out on Daryl Strawberry bobblehead.
Yes. I mean, these people are just, you know, they don't think of themselves.
Yeah. So you're ranting about the wedding not being moved and the lack of bobbleheads. No, but you know what? I agree with you, though, because 15,000.
Well, I know Yankee Stadium, they limit to 18,000, but they have a larger capacity.
Right. But you know what, though? If you buy a ticket, you should get.
And I know these other stadiums, that, you know what they do? They sell you a special ticket. I guess it costs a few more dollars, but you're guaranteed a giveaway.
You know what? That's
not a giveaway then. Which is really not a giveaway.
You bought it.
You paid for it.
You paid for it, right.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you really want a bobblehead, which maybe you're willing to pay a few extra dollars or something, you know, what? I don't know what the solution is, but, well, the solution is make more.
Exactly.
Have more.
Exactly.
All right, Jeff, we are presented by Bet Online. It is where the game starts, but we're not starting. We're ending, because we've done a lot of show.
With the poet.
That's how we're ending.
With the poet.
All right, Shel Krakowski.
And the musician.
Dave Dresser. And before we go, let's just say one more time, thank you to Kelly Bennett. Thank you to Nick Wilson. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Len. Thank you, listeners.
And the song is...
Baseball Always Brings You Home.
It does.
And we'll see you next week on episode 244.
Stay.